Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
We're going to cause trouble. Scott Ferrell is calling the shots from the sideline. We're going to make fun of people. We're going to hurt people's feelings. It's Ferrell on the bench. I believe in whipped cream with everything. Ferrell on the bench with Carver High. Carver High just told me he doesn't want to talk about his old place of employment because it gives him a butt rash. He just said that in the break.
Yeah.
He said, I don't really want to talk about this.
I don't really want to reach back there. So let's just.
you don't want to go back in time. All right, no. Then let's talk about something else that I've been storing here tonight. Mike Tyson.
Okay.
So the guy with the rubber glove was surprisingly gentle. No, the special, the knockout aired tonight on ABC. And let's just say I caught an hour and 15 minutes of it, of the 2 hours, because I was dealing with you on some technical stuff, right? And so we started talking, and then I didn't watch the rest of it. I just had it on, but I missed the major part of the last 45 minutes of it. And it's a four-hour special, and it runs this week and next week. So they're going to – next Tuesday night is what I was told. It's going to run the second part. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's tomorrow, but I was told it's next Tuesday, and it's only two parts. But tonight they talked about his career from the time he was a kid, literally when he was growing up, being beat up by bullies in Brooklyn, in Brownsville, whatever. And that he had been evicted from, that his family had been evicted from their home, his mother and him. And then, like, he literally was living on the streets. He was living in wherever. And then one thing led to another. And he and she was a real gem, too. She was an alcoholic. She had, you know, a different guy every night. Drugs, sex in front of the kid. Tyson was the only kid, Mike. And she did it right in front of him, and drinking and drugs and sex and all that. And the kid was exposed to that. And then when he'd leave the apartment or whatever in Brooklyn, he was open season. He was getting beat up. He was just a little kid. He was just a little kid with no future, no chance. He had no clue that he had, you know, stones in his hands, right? That he had these weapons. And then one thing led to another, and he basically ended up, you know, they talked about him with the pigeons, and then he started getting people actually liked him when he started raising the pigeons and racing them. They were basically, he'd let them out and other people would have pigeons and they would compete to who could get the pigeons to come back to the nest. And he would, like, you know, basically steal other pigeons from people because he was better at having a relationship with the pigeons. Like, this stuff was incredible. Like, he had like a love affair with pigeons. And so some kid came up to the rooftop one day and took one of the pigeons and snapped its head off. And, like, the thing was shaking in his hand, and they threw it on the ground. The thing was, tweaking, and it was dead in a minute. And Tyson, the kid was bigger than him and older than him and stronger than him and everything. And Mike Tyson beat the living hell out of this kid, beat him to a pulp. We welcome in our radio affiliate, SiriusXM, Channel 204, Mightier 1090 in San Diego, Sports Map, Sports Byline, Armed Forces Radio, Hoorah, Soldier, It's Pharrell, and Avenge with Carver. So the guy, he beat the crap out of this guy. I mean, beat him to a pulp. Senseless. Like, completely just destroyed him. And then they said that that moment changed his life forevermore. He wasn't going to have it. Nobody was going to be bullying him anymore. He realized that he could get angry. One thing leads to another. He ends up in, he gets sent away to this school for boys upstate New York, where they handle troubled youth, because he was considered a violent kid and, you know, crazy and troubled and from a broken home. The mother was a drunk and basically a hooker. And one thing leads to another, and he ends up at this school. And then he meets in some capacity, it's up near Catskills, and he meets Cuz D'Amato. There was a guy at the school who trained with D'Amato, and he trained kids at the boys' school. If any of them wanted to box, he would be the guy that would train them. And so this guy's name was Russell, and he brought Tyson down to meet Cuz D'Amato. And Cuz D'Amato immediately took a liking to the kid, because he saw his, you know, when he got to be like 16 years old, the kid had legs the size of Robert Newhouse. And he had this low center of gravity, and he was ripped like an Adonis. Like, the kid, you know, when he was 16, 17, he exploded and was absolutely ripped. Like, he was an animal. It was like an animal. And he was a savage. And his body just turned into this giant, you know, fire hydrant muscle, literally like a bear. And he realized that he had something, and he literally told him, "You're going to be the heavyweight champion of the world." And the kid's like, "What are you talking about? He's never boxed a day in his life, whatever." And he took him in. I'll tell you the rest of the story on the bench. So a minute into overtime, the ref has called a penalty on the Canes. And so the Predators are going on a power play a minute into overtime. Like,
wow.
I mean, at what point do you just put the effing whistles away? Like, they put the whistles away in the Penguin Islander game. I couldn't believe they called the penalty. Now, I don't deny it was a penalty. When they pulled down whoever, Bailey or whatever it was, one of them they pulled down with 6 minutes left in the game and gave the Islanders the power play. And then a minute before, the guy had been dumped down in the slot, when Pierre McGuire said, "That's a great no call and such a great game." But at the other end, it's just a great call on the Penguins. So you remember when he said that? He goes, "That's a great no call." And then 30 seconds later, he's like, "Well, that's just an obvious call." Well, the other one was obvious too. The guy got picked up and dumped in the slot. I didn't see the difference. But I don't deny that the call on the Penguins was a good call. I just don't like the call with 6 minutes left. And I don't like a call right here, Carver High, a minute into overtime in their building. In their building, he calls a penalty against the Canes a minute into overtime. Like, just put the effing whistles away and let them play to the death.
I just saw it too. I'm watching it because obviously I'm always about a minute and a half behind you. I just saw the call. That is an awful penalty call in overtime. I have seen, and I know you have too in our life, in overtime, you have to almost two-hand somebody with your stick to get a call in overtime. I mean, look, was it interference? Sure. But you cannot call that a minute into overtime. In this series, has been officiated, I feel, differently than almost every single other series in the playoffs this year. This series has featured games where teams have had 6 and 7 power play opportunities a game. And take the Islanders and the Penguins and the Caps and the Bruins. I mean, you could barely get a guy in the box in those games. And these games have had 6, 7 power plays.
If they score here. on this horrible call. I guarantee you, you're going to see cups of beer being thrown on the ice.
And
they're going to abuse those refs. They won't even be able to get off the ice without being hit in the head with a cup of beer. A can Brindamore of beer, a cup of beer. It's going to happen.
Has been very outspoken about the refs in this series already, Brindamore. He will go bonkers if they score a goal on this.
Now they've called a penalty on the Predators. They're going to call one on the Predators to even it out, because that's how crappy that call was. They're now yanking off one of the Predators for a hit. Same thing, interference in the neutral zone. Carrier goes off, and this call is as bad as the other one.
I got to ask you, do you think that maybe the ref at the beginning of the period, and I find it so hard to imagine that he could do this. Do you think he forgot it was overtime? Like, it's just the start. It's the start of a fresh period. You're going out. It's just.
Now, listen. This call that they did, you're going to see it now about 10 seconds from now on yours. It's so bad, this call. This call is so bad that, like, it's laughable. Like, we have to talk about these two bad calls tomorrow on Coast to Coast, because that's how bad it was. Whoever the ref is calling these penalties right now, he's the worst ref I've seen in the NHL yet in the playoffs, because those two calls both suck so bad it wasn't even funny. I mean, did you see yet the Aho trip on the interference? I mean, it's terrible. It's not even a penalty.
I'm probably going to see it any second
now. You're going to see it right now. It's the worst call ever. The Canes just won the game. Jordan Staal.
Wow.
In overtime.
That was another awful call.
Jeez. Jordan Staal with his third of the series, getting involved on the horrible call by the ref. But you understand, they were still 4-on-4. It was 4-on-4 hockey. So it was Jordan Staal did it all right in front of your boy Sosa. Pesci with the shot, loose puck, whacked in by Jordan Staal, game over. And the veteran gets it done with his two cups he won in Pittsburgh. Sosa made the clear on the rebound, but your boy Staal hit it out of the air and knocked it back in. That's game over, baby. But did you see the interference on Aho? That was a terrible call.
Awful. Absolute. Both of those penalties were embarrassing in the first 2 minutes of an overtime.
He called the overtime. He called the second penalty because the first one was so bad. He knew when they booed his ass for a minute, they knew that they couldn't get off the ice without being hit by beer cans. That's what was going to happen there. That's how bad that call was. And the second one was even worse. The first one was actually interference, but you don't make that call. The second one was a dive. That wasn't even a penalty.
No.
You know it.
Both of those, and listen, and people don't like to hear this, and a lot of people who don't watch hockey that often can't understand why a game gets called differently, not just in the playoffs, but especially in playoff overtime. The game gets called differently. They don't call anything. You have to almost behead somebody to get a penalty in overtime. It has to be extremely egregious. And those calls at the beginning of overtime.
Somebody.
And this Staal goal, I mean, geez. The puck took a couple really weird bounces. It was off of Saros. Oh, Saros kind of paddled it up in the air. And it banged into Staal, and Staal put it in.
Right.
Wow.
So let me ask you this question.
Yes.
I got to put on this. So Staal with the overtime goal, that's the winner.
I'm going to the Laker game now. Yeah.
Yeah, they're at halftime. So I don't know if you have it, but I'm on NBA TV now watching the second quarter of the Mavs.
Oh, right.
Three short lead over the Clippers. And there's already been some posterized, I guess Doncic postered Morris in the game, and that didn't go over well with Morris. There's already been some action in that game.
But anyway, see the Mavs beat them.
I would too. But here's the deal. So Tyson, let's get back to him. So Tyson is living now in Cuz D'Amato's house in upstate New York, in Creskill or whatever the hell it is. Where did I say it was? Is that where it was? I think it was.
The Catskill.
Catskill. So One thing leads to another. He's living with him, and he's got like several boxers living at the house. None of them had the talent that Tyson had. And Cuz D'Amato spotted the talent, and Cuz D'Amato was working with Kevin Rooney and my friend, Teddy Atlas. So I know Teddy for years and years. I've been friends with Teddy forever. And then it got even better for me because one of my teammates in basketball is his son-in-law. So my buddy is married to Teddy's daughter, right? So as you know, over the years, Teddy comes and does the show in Vegas or whatever. And Teddy won't do anything with anybody and except ESPN. Teddy's not interested. He's just not interested in doing anything. He's not one of these guys that needs attention. But when you give it to him, he's great on TV. I think the guy's great. So Teddy rarely does anything. You know, when it comes to doing side hustle, like here, I'm going to go on this show. I'm going to go on that show. I'm going to go on this show. He doesn't do that. So we get him to come on the show because I'm friends with him, right? So I didn't know the history of Teddy going all the way back to when he was very young and he was training Mike Tyson. So when Cuz D'Amato trained Tyson, Cuz D'Amato did it outside the ring and Teddy did it inside the ring. So Teddy was the guy doing all the heavy lifting. Cuz was already in his mid 70s. He was like 77 years old and he was training Mike Tyson. But Teddy was the guy inside the ring doing the dirty work. And so was Kevin Rooney. And are you kidding me? I'm like going to break again. I'm losing weight over here. I mean, honest to Christ, did we not just come back?
We got tied up with the Nashville Carolina game. We got into it.
Jesus Christ, these God. And they're so awful too to begin with. All right, so what happened was Pharrell on a bench with Carver High. So bottom line is Cuz D'Amato was training him outside the ring. Basically, he was Chuck in charge, but it was Teddy Atlas and Kevin Rooney doing all the, you know, really it was Teddy Atlas. And Kevin Rooney wasn't really even in the, he was there, but he was not the right-hand man of Cuz D'Amato. Teddy Atlas was. And Teddy was young, man. He was like, he couldn't have been more than 28 years old. And that's my guess, because this is footage from like this, you know, the 1980s. And I'm talking Teddy Atlas was young. I mean, he was as young as you can imagine. He had a mustache, the whole deal. He looked like he was going to Studio 54. So here's the deal. One thing leads to another, and he's training him and training him, and they end up in the Olympic, junior Olympic trials, whatever. And he goes and he wins the whole thing. Tyson goes to this, like Colorado Springs or something, and he just beats the crap out of everyone he fights. I mean, he went through the Olympic trials like he destroyed everyone. He won the trophy, won the gold, all the rest. So after that, he went back to Catskill, and he ended up going pro. One thing leads to another. He starts fighting in New York City and wherever, Atlantic City, New York City, and then eventually Vegas. But he's 19 years old and he's knocking out everyone he fights. I mean, he goes into these fights and these fights are over in 2 minutes. I mean, every single one of them. He went in and just absolutely shanked people. I mean, he knocked out every guy that they put in front of him. Every one of them. He never once didn't have a knockout. He knocked out every single guy he fought. He never had a fight go more than two rounds. I mean, he destroyed everybody. And I'm watching this thing, this old footage of him, and I'm going, oh, my God, because it's so old, the footage. It's from the very beginning of his career. And he is a savage. This guy, no mercy, sweep the leg. He is just destroying and decapitating people. And I'm talking grown men. And this kid's 19 years old, and he is a kid. He's got a little baby face, the whole deal. But his arms are gigantic. He's got guns on his biceps are huge. His legs are the size of Robert Newhouse. I told you, I've never seen anything like his legs. When he first started fighting, when he was 19, and they trained him, and he was running in Catskill on the streets miles every day and eating right and living with Cuz and the old lady was feeding him like potatoes and steak and you name it. And this kid got enormous. His legs were the size of tree trunks. And I mean, when he hits you from an uppercut or a body shot or if he landed a cross on your temple, you were done. I mean, done. Like you were getting carried out on a stretcher. And this guy, then he eventually went to Vegas and fought Trevor Burbick for the world championship. He's 19 years old, and he knocked him the F out. I mean, he knocked Trevor Burbick out so bad that when Burbick tried to get up, he fell down five more times. He was so dizzy, he never knew where he was. The guy, he couldn't even stand. The guy tried to get up five times. He fell down each time. I mean, the guy stumbled around like a drunk leaving a bar at 3 a.m. in Manhattan. I mean, this guy was falling on his face. He got hit so hard. And Tyson was Satan. He was the devil. Like, he was just killing everybody. There was no one going to beat him. One thing leads to another. And Teddy, I guess Mike grabbed Teddy's sister's ass or something. And he grabbed her butt. And Teddy freaked out. And Teddy pulled a gun on him, put a gun to his head, in his ear, put a gun in his ear, he took a gun and put it in his ear, and then he pulled the gun away. He threatened him. He said, "You ever touch anyone else in my family, I will kill you dead." And he pulled the gun away from his ear, and he shot it in the air. And so, like, Tyson got, like, deaf from it or something. He got all shook up from it. And then they fired him. That was it. That was it for Teddy Atlas and Mike Tyson. That ended it. Their relationship ended right then and there. And then Kevin Rooney took over Carver High, and Kevin Rooney was like that third wheel, and he became the new Teddy. And then Cuz died, right? And then Kevin took over Mike Tyson's career, and he ended up staying with him through thick and thin forever. And the biggest problem he had is that Cuz was dead, and then here came Don King. And Don King got his claws in him, and that was all she wrote. And I think Don King poisoned him, absolutely destroyed him and poisoned him and stole from him and lied to him and did everything to him. Don, as you know, I worked for Don for over a decade, and I never saw, I'm being honest, I never saw that side of Don King. I knew he was evil, but I got along with Alan Hopper, his top PR guy, and Don very well. Don has been on my show 1,000 times over the years, and I'm very good friends with Don King and Alan Hopper, and I worked for him for over a decade, and I never once saw any of that. I literally had the greatest relationship with him, and I just promoted his fights, just like I do for Showtime and just like I do for the PBC and Al Heyman and Bruce Spinkow and Richard Schaefer and all the Fox PBC fights. So I've done everything. I worked with HBO. I've worked with Showtime. I've worked with PBC. I worked with Don King. And I've been doing fights for over 30 years. And I just found it fascinating, Carver High, the story about Tyson. Because they haven't even started. Like, they started talking about Robin Givens. They started talking about him marrying her. They started talking about him living in the mansion with her. And they did not start, it would appear to me, because I was talking to you and I was busy. I didn't see. But they did not get into the problems yet that he started having with Robin Givens and his marriage and violence and the police and jail and rape and everything else. That all is coming next week.
They need a whole nother night for, like you said, they need a whole nother night for all that stuff.
And that's coming next week.
That's a lot of ground to cover right there.
But I mean, you have to admit that without a doubt that there's never been anyone like him. Not in the heavyweight division. Like, I'm talking about, since him, I think Muhammad Ali was 10. Yeah. Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali and, Foreman, all those guys, I think are bigger than Mike Tyson. I might give him, Ali, Frazier, Tyson, then Foreman. Foreman had a long career, and he became champ at an old age or whatever, and it was a miracle, but he did it. I won't deny he had a brilliant career, but no way was he more dangerous, in my opinion, than Mike Tyson. right? So Mike Tyson to me was the most dangerous fighter I think I ever saw. Like, I saw Muhammad Ali lose, right? I saw him lose a few times, and I saw Frazier lose a few times. And then I saw Foreman have his youth of his career and his old age part of his career. But I never saw anyone like Tyson who destroyed everyone he fought until he lost to Buster Douglas, right? So that was the first time anyone had ever touched him. And that was it. He got knocked out in Tokyo. But prior to that, I've never seen anyone put the fear of God in fighters like Mike Tyson did. Like, I think every single person that fought him, when they got in the ring before the first bell rang for the first round, I don't think there was one fighter that wasn't afraid of him. Like, they knew what was coming. They were going to get their ass beat. And you know what it reminded me of? I'll be honest. And this is a great analogy. It reminded me of the Chicago Bears in 1985 when their defense came on the field and the other quarterback knew what his day was going to be like. There wasn't a quarterback in the NFL that wasn't scared to death to play the Chicago Bears in 1985. There was not one quarterback that did not fear for his life and body and brain. He knew what was going to happen on Sundays at Soldier Field or wherever the hell they played. If they played at the other place, it didn't matter. They were going down, and they were going to have a headache on Monday. They got messed up when they went against that defense. When you fought Mike Tyson and you got in the ring and you stared at that guy across the ring, and when they rang that bell and he came toward you, you knew, every one of them, 100% of them knew they were in big trouble. I mean, that they were in big trouble, mister. They were going to get their ass beat. There wasn't one guy ever. I still cannot believe. I'll never forget the night he lost to Buster Douglas as long as I live. It was snowing in Pittsburgh. I tell the story all the time. My buddy and I were driving. And Pittsburgh is very steep and hilly. It was snowing, and we slid down this hill and crashed into the ditch in the bottom of the hill. Somehow we got out of the car, dug the car out of the ditch, got out, got it going again, sped home in the snow, sliding all over the road, just absolutely wasted, right? And we get home and we turn on the TV and we saw Buster Douglas, the whole fight, and we saw him beat Mike Tyson. And I'll never forget it. Like, it was the most stunning thing I'd ever seen in my life, because that guy put the fear of God in everyone, and he destroyed everyone he fought. He literally destroyed everyone. And then all of a sudden, one night, he got his ass beat. It was unbelievable. It was a horrible fall from grace, but it was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in my life. All right, Pharrell on the Bench with Carver Hyde. So what's your opinion of... you know, obviously, I just told the whole kind of story of what the first episode was about, and a little bit of his problems, a little bit of his head case, mental stuff, where he had issues. He had deep-seated issues with his mother as a child, growing up in Brooklyn and being a victim of that those surroundings and that atmosphere in Brooklyn, which was crime and murder and rape and pillage and you name it. I mean, absolute, the worst of the worst. Where he lived is literally, where he grew up is hell on earth. It really is. Back then it was hell on earth. And it was as bad as it gets of any, you know, any big city, you know, poverty stricken area of any big city in America. It had to be the worst place on earth. It really did. There's no city that ever had anything like that. Brownsville, Brooklyn. Are you kidding me? It was as bad as it gets. It's like Fort Apache, the Bronx, those stories. That's not even real compared to this, right? You know that's true, Carver High. So what did you think? You know that's true. So what do you think of when you think of Mike Tyson? I mean, just the boxing career and his life. I mean, I don't care about all his nonsense now and his commercials and his Broadway and all his other stupid stuff he does. I think he's I think now he's a tool. But back then, like when he was fighting, he was the meanest dude on earth.
Oh, no doubt. And I remember that when I was a kid. I mean, when he was absolutely destroying people, I mean, I was 7, 8, 9 years old. But when you're 7, 8, 9 years old, you know who the heavyweight champion of the world is. I mean, you just, I mean, then, I don't think you do anymore. Trust me, no 7, 8, 9 year old knows who Tyson Fury is. But I'm saying in that time.
You're right. You're right.
Because think about it. In that time, when Tyson was destroying people, you're coming off a stretch of 30 years where everybody knew who the heavyweight champion of the world was, whether it was Frazier or Muhammad Ali, or you go on and on and on. These were worldwide known figures that right. everybody knew who they were. And Mike Tyson was that in the late 80s when I was a kid. We talk about this all the time. Boxing doesn't matter. I mean, nobody knows who these guys are anymore unless you're actually watching the sport like we do all the time. Being the world heavyweight champ anymore, no, the average person, the average sports fan, they don't care.
Who's the heavyweight champion of the world? Who's the heavyweight champion of the world right now?
Well, I mean, I guess, well, it depends. And that's another problem. Well, I guess a couple
belts. That's the problem.
A couple belts, it's Joshua. A couple belts, right. it's Fury. You know, like, it's all nonsense. But you know this, because obviously you're a little bit older than me. It had, you knew who the heavyweight champ of the world was. Muhammad that's Ali. Right. Frazier. You know, you just go on and on. George Foreman. Mike Tyson. Even Lennox Lewis, you know, Evander Holyfield, like you knew who the heavyweight champ of the world was. And in the last 20 years, that's gone away. But when Tyson was, and I was a kid, he was mauling people. And I remember when he lost, I think I was 12 or 13 years old. And it was like, wow, this is weird. And then I was a little bit older and really understood it when he got out of jail. And then that whole nonsense started where he went fighting again. He fought the Holyfield fights that you were at, where he bit the ear off. He did, you know, all that crazy stuff. But in prime, early career Tyson, pre-Buster Douglas, he was an absolute monster finisher.
Do you consider, like, I just got to be honest with you. I think Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua are both pathetic. Like, I do not respect either one of them.
Nobody
I'm not a
anything.
Fan. I interviewed Tyson Fury. You remember. I know him. I've interviewed him. He's been on my show. He's been cool. And I've interviewed Deontay Wilder. And I just do not think any of them, not one of them, ever could even now or in the future, hold a candle to any of the people that you mentioned before.
No,
up until Lennox Lewis. I thought Lennox Lewis was average. I thought Klitschko was better than Lennox Lewis, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But I think it ended there. For me, it ended before
then. That's
when
it started to fade away. It started to fade away at that point. Like, after Tyson and Holyfield, it started, because I think Holyfield still had that cachet and that. But it started to fade in the mid to late 90s. It's almost like when Tyson, when everything happened with him, is when it started to kind of go away. You know, having that the prestige of being the heavyweight champ of the world.
Do you respect Tyson Fury like he's some kind of badass? Because I'll tell you what, I know people. I'm gonna just say it. I saw the first fight. I saw both fights, so I was at both fights. The first fight, you know, the one that ended in a draw. Deontay Wilder beat his ass. Okay, he knocked him down twice, and in the money round, in the 12th, he knocked his ass out completely. And the guy got up with 5 seconds left, whatever, 3 seconds, whatever it was, stood up, and then somehow threw hands. God or something was involved in that, because all I know is that guy got his ass beat. I mean, Wilder beat his ass. And then in the second fight, because they gave him a draw because you can't, you know, the guy got up and – he dominated the fight
dominated
in terms
fight.
Of points, but no Wilder knocked him out twice. That's all I know. And then, fair enough. So they fight again, and Fury beats his ass. I mean, kills him. Now, do you believe that? Because I just don't think he's that great. I think he's average. I think he got lucky. I think he had a big night. I think he landed some bombs, and I think he knocked him out. And I don't believe any of Wilder's excuses whatsoever. I think he just got knocked the F out. And now they're going to fight again. Now, obviously, Fury's a favorite, and he's going to be a heavy favorite. But the reality is, I saw that guy, Wilder, knock him out twice. And I'm telling you, that big, fat galoof can be knocked out like a tree tipping over in the forest. I've seen it. I've seen him get knocked down. I've seen him get knocked out. And I'm telling you, if this guy trains right and stays away from that guy's hands and lands a big shot, I mean, all it takes is one. And he did it twice. So I'm telling you, if he stays away from that guy's reach and hands and somehow lands one of his enormous bombs, he can put that guy Tyson Fury to sleep again. I'm telling you, it could happen because there's no one on the face of the earth that thinks that Wilder's going to win that fight. There's no one betting on him. No one. No. Nobody. And you know as well as I do that he can knock him out. I've seen him do it. So he did it twice. I went into the second fight thinking he's going to do it again. He's going to knock him out because he's a better athlete. I think the one guy, Fury's a fat ass. I've never believed he was in any kind of shape at all. I still don't. I think he's a slob. He's not, to me, he's never been a real champion. He's a fat ass slob. And so I think he's, you know, he's got pillows hanging off of him. He looks like crap. And then everybody says, you should have seen him when he did cocaine. I'm like, what? Like, what? Can you imagine Muhammad Ali doing cocaine and being a drunk, fat slob? You never saw that. Joe Frazier, he'd have killed you before you called him a drunk and a fat slob. But this guy, I'm telling you, Fury should win the fight. Fair enough. He's better. There's no doubt he's a better boxer. But I'm telling you, that guy can land a shot. If he lands a one shot on that guy's temple, I'm telling you, he's going down. He's going to go down like a tree.
Well, I think the thing that, and when this fight happens in a couple months, the thing that I'm most interested in is, now, Wilder made every excuse in the book, like every horrible excuse, like between the costume and the trainer.
I lost all respect for him. I lost all respect.
Like he did such an awful job with all the excuses that he had for getting his ass beat in that fight in the MGM. I mean, it was just unbelievable. But does this guy, and this is where we're going to find out, does this guy have any pride, any heart, as he's been sitting around for the last 18 months, basically saying to himself, without, not publicly, because clearly publicly it was all excuses, to himself privately, as he's saying it, I got embarrassed that night, and I know I can beat that slob. And I am yes. now gonna take and I am now gonna take the next X amount of months, and I am gonna get myself in the best shape I've ever been in my life. And I'm going to knock this dude down. Does Wilder yes. have that in him to do it? Because yes. if he does, he absolutely can beat him in that fight in July. He's not some stiff. I mean, he, like you said, that guy can throw hands. But something was up with him that night, excuses or not.
There's no doubt.
He wasn't ready to fight the guy.
But I'll tell you this much. He is clearly, Fury's a better fighter. But I'm telling you, Fury is not taking him seriously at all. In fact, yeah. he beat his ass so badly and so easily that he knows that he can kill him easily. He knows that he is a better fighter, better boxer, better point guy, everything about it. He's better. He dominated him. He knows that he can beat him so easily. It's not even funny. So he's not taking him seriously at all. He's been joking on, you watch him videos, everything. Every week he does something funny, making fun of him. He's like, I'm going to knock this guy's head off. This is a piece of cake. This is easy money.
Which
joke. This is a joke. I'm telling you, that guy is training like a savage already. Do you see the video of him today, like throwing logs around? He's throwing yeah. trees.
He's doing the Rocky thing. He's doing the Rocky Four in Russia.
The full Rocky training. He's training in the mud, in the sand. He's running up mountains. I'm telling you, if he lands one punch, that big yeah. fat ass galoof's going over like a tree. But the other thing is.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm telling you, and that'll ruin everything. There'll be no Joshua fight. No, there'll be no nothing. It'll be oh, and Wilder will be the champ again.
We said that for a year before Wilder was supposed to fight Joshua the first. You know, when Wilder was supposed to fight Joshua, forget Fury and Joshua. We thought Wilder Joshua was going to be the fight.
Right.
And then the Fury nonsense happened. And he got his ass beat by Fury, and that ruined. And Joshua also lost to Ortiz, so they both had their problems. In that fight never happening, but
that's because they
right
all
about...
suck.
Exactly,
it's because they all
dance
suck.
And never fight each other. But Fury, you're right. He's doing the same thing, and Wilder made the excuses. But the real story with Wilder and why he lost that second fight so bad is he was doing exactly what Fury's doing now. He went into that fight thinking he could beat his ass on no training because he knocked him down in that fight in L.A.
That's right.
And he thought he was going to beat his ass, and he didn't do it. And now he is going to train, and he is going to get ready to beat this guy's ass.
And I'm telling you that Fury's not doing the training, and he's just doing the talking now. Like, this is easy work.
Yep.
And that you cannot do that against a guy as ripped and athletic. I'm telling you, you're right, exactly what happened. He never respected Fury at all after he knocked him down twice. He knew he'd finish him this time. It was all about landing one shot, and he never landed it because the entire fight he got his ass beat and knocked around, and then he was not in shape. And the more of the beating he took, the less he was able to withstand it based on not being in shape. This time he knows he has to be in shape to do it. All right, so I look forward to that. I really do. And Spence Pacquiao. I did want to say one other thing, though. I am very turned off by this guy, Tristan Jari, and his comments about the goal last night that lost the game, the Bailey double overtime goal. He said, stop the puck maybe.
Next time I'll play it to the side. That I'll play it to the side or something like that.
Are you kidding me, this guy?
I'll have to find video of that. We'll have to play that on Coast to Coast tomorrow. We'll have to find
it. You got to, because that guy acts like it's no big deal and he's moved on. I am telling you, I'm convinced that kid will never live that down. I think his career's going to take a beating because of that goal. So I'm not fooled by Barry Trotz saying, if we play as hard as we did tonight and we have Sorokin playing that way, we'll have a chance. You know, I love how he plays like, they're lucky to be in a series. Like, who's he kidding? Man. He knows it's over. He knows it's over because he knows that Tristan Jari's playing in goal tomorrow night in Long Island at the Barn. They're doomed. They have no chance to win that game. Do you honestly believe for one effing minute that the Penguins are going to beat the Islanders with that kid in goal tomorrow night? With that head case after giving up that goal? That kid's, he's shot. I mean, like, he needs a shrink. And he doesn't even think it was that big of a deal.
Yeah, and the environment that he's going into. They're going to have about just under 10,000 in the Coliseum tomorrow night. Largest crowd that they've had there since they started letting people back in.
Right.
It's going to be that they're going to be on Jari from the puck drop. The Jari chants are going to be all over Nassau Coliseum.
He's going to melt like an ice cream cone.
Look, I do still believe though tomorrow night, and this is the key with almost every Islander game. Last night was the first game they won when they didn't score first. I feel like in the last 2 years in the playoffs, scoring the first goal is so enormous in these Islander games. And if the Penguins can come out in the first and kind of get the crowd out of it and score the first goal, it's just like last night with the Islanders. Anything can happen. It really can.
Okay, so the Penguins don't score on Sorokin enough to win the game.
Right.
How's that for a theory?
That's
they,
fine.
They score two goals. That's it.
I think the Islanders are going to win tomorrow night. I'm not telling you that. I think the Islanders finish it.
I think it's over. They're going to lose. They're going to get their ass beat. They can't score. They can't score goals.
Now,
it's the same thing.
Now, here's the real question. Are the Panthers going to win? Because I have a ticket for that series to go 7 games that we can cash if the Panthers win tomorrow night. So let's go.
All right. So right now, just so you know, Clippers up at the half by 2. Now it's Mavs by 1 early in the third, 74-73. And the Lakers are winning 77-69 over the Suns. That game is getting good. Lakers just hit another shot. They're up 79-69, up 10, going to the fourth. I'll see you tomorrow at 4 on Coast to Coast. Great job, Carver Hockey.